It's now time for a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, voter, and emotion worker. She uses all of those skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy, healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth. What is on your mind today?
Well, first, I think we need to go back and add eavesdropper into my introduction and take out the voter because I miss the eavesdropper because
I know.
It's so essential.
We
it's
took
so
that
essential.
Out. Okay, yeah. We'll put that back. We know you're a voter. We're going to go with the eavesdropper.
Yes, because it's so essential to how I live my life on a daily basis.
Oh, I love
and
it.
And I think it's one of the things I've missed most about being in our quarantine is that I don't get to just kind of sit by and overhear conversations that are going on around me and hear the joy and hear the anger and hear the interest. I miss eavesdropping immensely. So I need to put it back into my routine. That's the first thing
if
on my mind.
If you're that close, you're too close.
To be able to hear the conversations right now.
Right.
We're too far away.
Right.
But the other thing that's on my mind, and it has a lot to do with the eavesdropping, and the other piece that should be in my intro each week is I'm a person of love because I cannot feel more strongly about the power of love as a healing tool in our lives and relationships. And I have been working with the students this week. We've been doing art shows. They've been doing art presentations. And in their art presentations, they choose a topic that stood out for them over the quarter and they make something beautiful to represent those feelings. And what came up multiple times in the last couple of weeks that was really heartbreaking were students who said, it was shocking to me to have you talk in class about putting time and energy into love and into our loving relationships and our intimate relationships, because that's the last thing I put any time and energy into. As a matter of fact, I am terrified of the idea of being in a loving, intimate relationship. Being vulnerable in that way would be the worst thing I could think of. And students in the class were nodding and agreeing, you know, that, yeah, I have that same experience. It's why hookup culture is so powerful on college campuses, because it has nothing to do with love or intimacy. It's all just about kind of release and some sort of backwards attempt at connection. But this generation of students, and in some ways the millennials as well, in a lot of ways the millennials, and some ways the Gen X, which I'm on the end of, we're all deeply impacted by the divorce explosion post-second wave of feminism and the, you know, devastation of divorce across families in this country. And so the generations that have preceded or followed, not preceded, have followed the divorce crisis in this country have been really resistant, reluctant, afraid, concerned, phobic about becoming too vulnerably attached to another human being. And so in talking to the students about this, because I push it all quarter, I talk about there's nothing at the end of your life that you're really going to have cared that much about more than your intimate relationships and the quality of those relationships. I can guarantee you that you won't care how many promotions you got in your lifetime if you don't have someone to have witnessed that journey to promotions with you. And so for the students, this is mind-blowing because they've been taught since they were very young through their AP classes and through their advanced studies and trying to push to get into the best college. They've been taught from a very young age that the thing you should value most is how productive you can be and how productive you can be at a high paying job, and that you should attach yourself and surround yourself by a career that you love and are passionate for, because at the end of the day, that's going to be how you identify yourself or how you are identified in the world. And this is the story class after class after class has come into over the last 12 years I've been teaching. And it's become even more so the story. How can you, Professor Barrett, say that I should be vulnerable to another person and risk getting my heart broken when I could safely put my time and energy into a career that I have control over? which is a whole nother subject, because we know now, looking at the 3+ million people without work, that you have no control over your job, and you actually have less control over what happens to your heart and your feelings when you devote yourself to a career than you do when you devote yourself to a committed, loving relationship. But having said that, this has been heavy on my mind for the last, well, for a long time, but mostly for the last few weeks, because the other conversation that we're having consistently is in regards to what's happening in our country and the divisions in our country and how people are completely blown apart in their relationships, in family relationships. We've got Thanksgiving coming, and for some people, they're relieved that we're going to have to do Thanksgiving virtually, because it'll avoid them having to have that uncomfortable conversation with members of their family that they don't align with any longer or haven't aligned with. And that is sad, because we keep talking about, as clinicians, and you hear about it on, you know, different programs, we need to heal the divide. We need to bring the country together. We need to heal the soul of this country. But no one really has a plan. No one really knows what that looks like. We're saying it a lot. We need to do it. But no one's offering a real plan. And I think that's because the real plan is terrifying for people who have now, 3 generations out, stopped being vulnerable in their loving relationships. They've stopped opening their hearts to each other. People who are married are still cut off from each other. They have more partnership-like relationships than real, committed, connected, loving relationships. And I'll tell you one place that this started. Right post feminist movement, high divorce rate, the clinical message that we sent to people was, never completely connect yourself to another human being, because they may leave you and then you'll be heartbroken. And as soon as that became the clinical message that therapists were telling people, people started to back out of relationships. They never went 100% in. And the couples that went 100% in, the other clinical message was, you must be enmeshed. If you're that connected to another human being, you're enmeshed, and that's not healthy. And you should never be enmeshed with another human being. And that is a horrific thing to tell someone who is in a connected, committed relationship. Because in the healthiest of relationships, you are enmeshed. If your partner were to die, you should be devastated. You are connected in a way that if that relationship end, you would be broken until you healed. But we've taken this term enmeshment, and we've seen it from this toxic place, because there is unhealthy connections. There are ways that people join their relationships in a way that isn't supportive. But for many, many people with the skill sets and the information and the guidance, they connect relationships that are completely connected and enmeshed. And so here we are as a country trying to figure out how to heal the divide. And the answer is right in front of us. We have to fall in love. We have to fall in love. And not necessarily with each other, not necessarily with the people who have no political connections that we relate to. We have to fall in love with someone and then open ourselves in such a way that those floodgates overwhelm us with this sense of feeling whole and seen and alive. Because when we are bathed in love, we have no space for hate. Think about it. The last time you really loved someone that you really opened yourself to, whether it's your child or a partner, you know, and maybe it's your animals that you've completely opened yourself to. When you have opened yourself in a way that you are vulnerable, that you are enmeshed in that relationship, there's no room for anything else. You don't want to have fights. You don't want to have divisions. You don't want to feel conflicted about how other people voted or what their religious beliefs are. You just want to feel the love. You just want to feel love. And then you emanate that love out to other people. And that's how we heal the divide, is that each of us needs to take personal responsibility for falling in love, really in love, to the point of being vulnerable, being willing to risk heartache to completely drop into that space. And so my guest today is the person that actually sparked this story in my head, because a few months ago, he sent me his book. We had a conversation, a couple conversations, but he sent me his book, Love Over 60. And he said, you know, I fell in love deeply over the age of 60. And this relationship has transformed my life. And I think we should talk about what that's like, what that love feels like. And I said, interesting. I'm not sure, but let's talk about it. And now it makes sense. I know why this person reached out to me, because this is what we should be talking about. How do we help people fall in love? How do we help this generation of students learn to be vulnerable, to value the intimate relationships, to open themselves to another person and risk being hurt? And how do we help our peers who are living in kind of loveless partnerships that stopped being vibrant years ago, but they don't know where else to go? Because those are the people who are online on their social media 24/7, posting things that are really negative and toxic and keeping everything divided. Because in their own life off social media, they're not nurturing love. They're not in love. They don't have space for being in love because they're too busy spitting out negative, sad things on social media. But if they put all of that energy they were putting into social media into being in love, think how different their lives would be. So my guest today is Bob Kam, and I think many of you know Bob because he's been around the Central Coast for a long time. He's an author, he's a consultant, he's a coach, he's a man who is deeply, deeply in love, and he loves to write poetry. And so I invited Bob on to be my guest today so we could talk about what that looks like to take chances with love. And he's got some great stories, and we're going to share them today. So this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation by sending us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow me on Facebook. You can follow me on Instagram, elizabeth_TRT. If I may say so, the love of my life and is in my Instagram post today, and you can check him out because he's absolutely beautiful. And you can also listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org or podcast our show, upload for listening at a future date by visiting anywhere you get your podcasts. If you leave a review, it passes the show on to other people. So we are going all in on love today. And I hope you will be part of this conversation in any way you can. If anything, just hug the person next to you while you're listening. And we are going to take a quick back break, and we'll be back. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone. One that you adore can love is all that I can give to you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I welcome you today, Bob Kam, to the show. I am so glad you reached out to me a few months ago because I look forward to this.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
So, Bob, before we get started, I need to share something, and you know this, but we have an interesting history together because your parents moved to the Central Coast in 1983, I think, and I sold them their very first place here on the Central Coast. I was their realtor, and we never met each other, you and I, but I had a great, loving relationship with Phyllis and Herb Kam.
Yeah, it's just one of those bits of serendipity that we can't anticipate, you know, and it's another little vinelet of love when you think about it. You know, my parents came here because of our relationship. I had two older brothers. They were not as close to my older brothers as they were to me. So they just decided if we're going to retire, we're going to live nearby.
I love that. I think that's beautiful.
And so you got to facilitate the whole process. It's wonderful.
Yes, I was the beneficiary, I think, in a backhanded way. But today I've invited you, Bob, to come on the air and talk about love over 60. And so let's put it in context. And please start off sharing your love story.
Okay. Well, I was 60 years old and found myself single. And rather than go into a long, deep grieving process, I grieved intensely, briefly over the relationship that had just ended. And when I came up out of that, I had this very, very strong feeling that I was not done loving, that I had it in me to love again, that there was someone out there that I could give this to and who would want to reciprocate. I was just determined. And 3 months, almost to the day after the end of the previous relationship, a mutual friend put Andrea, my now wife, and myself together, initially through email. And the emails were so compelling that I just picked up the phone and called her on the very same day that we first exchanged emails. And the conversations were so rich and lovely that we determined that we were going to meet pretty soon. We talked on the phone every day for 2 to 3 hours over the next several days until she was down in Laguna Beach. And out of the blue, she just said to me, "Gee, it's a shame you're so far away because I'm going to have a birthday party for my best girlfriend, in a few days." And I said, "Well, are you inviting me to this party?" Because her being 250 miles away meant nothing to me because my son was 350 miles away to the north and I would make that trip all the time. So she said, "Well, I guess I am." And I said, "Well, do you have a place for me to crash?" She said, "We can work that out." So I said, "Okay, I'm going to come down there." So we had been talking on the phone for basically about a week when we then met face to face and fell into a kiss that, honest to God, it lasted about 3 hours on and off. You know, it was just like that. It was so intense. And I want people to hear this. I'm 60. She's 64 at the time. It doesn't matter. I fell in love when I was 7. I was in love when I was 17. I was in love every decade. This was just as intense, if not more so, than anything I ever experienced. In many ways, more so because it was richer. And the subtitle of the book, Love Over 60, as you know, is "Later the Hour, Sweeter the Moment." Mm-hmm. So there's something about being older that intensifies the sense of wanting to connect and wanting to take the chance to say, "Here I am. Here I am."
And I think that's part of what really drew me to this conversation is that for many people, you know, having an end of a relationship would be, "I'm closing the door on that part of my life. I won't go there again." How did you allow yourself to open to that vulnerable state again? What makes you different?
Well, I think the short answer is that I had a lot of therapy when I was younger. And frankly, this is not meant to be an advertisement for your profession or my wife's, who is also a marriage and family therapist. But I did a lot of grief work in my late 20s. I mean, intense, deep grief work. And one of the things it left me with was the capacity to go back there if I needed to. When I say back there, I mean into my sadness, you know. So when a relationship ended, I was able to grieve over it. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one of the challenges in the world today is that a lot of people have lost the capacity to grieve, to surrender to their own profound sense of loss. And this therapy that I went through back in the mid to late 70s, mostly in my late 20s, restored in me the capacity to just let go and surrender into my tears. So as I referred to it, I had a relationship that lasted almost 4 years and then it ended. And I cried intensely over that for about a week. And then I just surfaced, literally like coming up out of the ocean. And it was like, "I'm here. I'm alive. I have this capacity to love and accept love. I got to go find it." You know, I was determined. So I know that that's not easy for people to do. I know that I was lucky that I got all that help. Mm-hmm. So many years ago.
And the right kind of help, too. Because yes. As I mentioned at the beginning, clinicians have been part of the problem in allowing people or helping people to open up again. A lot of the clinical message right. In the late 70s when you were going to therapy was, "Don't go there," right? It's all about you. Right. Just think about yourself.
Right. The therapy that I was in was, I would say straight up front, The single most important characteristic that a person needs if they are going to love in this world is courage. Mm-hmm. And the word courage comes from, you know, the root is cœur, which is the French for heart. So courage is an action of the heart. I think it takes courage to cry, particularly for men, but for women as well, to cry deeply about losing something. And people will say, well, why should I go there? Why should I have all that misery? Well, here's the truth. Okay, so the birthplace of hurt is also the birthplace of bliss. They come out of the same source. So even in the workplace, in your opening, you referred to, you know, the focus in our culture on work. Even the degree to which you can allow yourself to love your work and attach deeply to your work, that is impacted by how open you are to your own heart. I mean, I've had my heart crushed in work, right? Because I gave myself to it. And I succeeded often, but I also failed, right? So being able to process a failure and not have failures accumulate like weight upon you, my method is to just grieve, is to just go there and cry about it. You know, so that is where I think it starts, is the courage to say, I'm hurting, I'm sad, I'm lonely. I don't know why this ended. In one of my poems, I have a line even now that says, I was not raised to this. I was not raised to be good at the intimate relationship. I was not raised to be an intimate lover. I was raised to be a longing lover. That was the dynamic between me and my mom. Long for her because she's not really that intimately involved with me as a child, see. And so the only way I could ever break out of that was to do some of the grief work from the child.
And to not fear the grief, because I want to focus on love, but we have to talk about the grief piece to open up to love. I understand that. But it is so important because we have very little capacity in our whole culture now to feel anything that's bad, which is, I go back again to social media bashing, but this is a place that whenever someone feels bored or sad or lonely, they go on this social media scroll so they don't have to feel anything. And we don't allow ourselves to feel the bad things, we never get the good things. And I think that's the essence of what you're talking about with the grief work.
Yes.
You could never be available to love over 60 until you cleared the muck of unexpressed grief.
That is correct. And I think our culture right now is dominated by anger and fear. At least the meta culture, you know, the super culture that is driven by social media and the traditional media as well. And we've been swept up into this political vortex where people have dug in so deeply. And you cannot love when you are in a state of anger and hate. You can't. Okay, so if people really want their lives to be better, they really want their lives to be better. And they say, well, you know, you think Joe Biden is going to walk into the Oval Office with a magic wand, wave it a couple of times, have Harry Potter come flying through in his broomstick, and we're all going to be healed? I don't think so. I think we all, you mentioned it in the intro, we all hold a piece of responsibility to work at healing ourselves and anybody with whom we have contact, right? And so, again, I think that takes courage. Sometimes it takes courage just to not go on Facebook. Sometimes it takes courage to get up out of your chair and go find a person, even if you've got to stand 6 feet from them with your masks on, and have an actual conversation, or even this, even to Zoom in and be looking at someone's face, you know, and sharing things that matter to you. Go ahead.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to my guest, Bob Kam. He's an author, a poet, a consultant, a coach, a man deeply in love, which is our focus for today. And I invited Bob to come on because I wanted him to talk about what this experience has been like to love over 60, and to maybe inspire some of us to really double down on those that are in our sphere right now, to really inspect how much love, energy we're putting into the world in our own relationships. Because as you touched on a little bit, Bob, we're spending a lot of time. Some studies say 4 to 7 hours a day people are spending on social media, on Netflix, right? All right. The things we do to distract ourselves. And right. We're putting less than 20 minutes a week into our intimate relationships. That's not a day. Right. It's 20 right. minutes a week. And so if we're not putting, and statistically, if you're not putting 20 hours a week into your intimate relationships, 20 hours per week, then you're not really connecting in a deep and profound way. But many of people have found themselves at odds with how to open up and be vulnerable. And I started off talking about my students and my fear for this generation and the millennials, that they've been raised with the completely wrong message and they're missing out. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And so I want to touch a little bit more before we go into our break, Bob, about this love that you have with Andrea that comes after the age of 60. Because I read the bio, and you didn't waste much time going from first kiss to moving in and getting married. And yeah. So that's a different message than we tell young people. You went right. for it. So
right. Well, in fact, Andrea and I occasionally remind each other when we hear about young people, maybe within our sphere, who are getting together really quickly. I on the fifth day of interacting with her directly, I said to her, I want you to be my wife someday. I don't know if that matters to you, and she said, oh, I want to be your wife. And it was like that.
Five days.
And within 3 months, we had made an offer on a house because she was willing to leave Laguna Beach. I would have gone there, but she said, no, I love San Luis Obispo. Laguna's getting too crowded. We made an offer on a house. We actually took possession of that house within 5 months. And about a month and a half later, we were a family in that house. Okay. Now, part of that speed is fueled by the sense that at 60 or 60, she was 64, that your mortality is more palpable. It's more tangible to you. You don't know how long you have. You've lost people. You've seen people that you thought were going to be around forever go away. So that's a little different than what some people might feel in youth. Also, we had both been married before. We had both fallen in love before, had good relationships, and for whatever reason had them eventually go bad. So I'm not necessarily recommending to somebody who's 20 years old, that you buy a house together in 3 months, if you can afford. I'm not saying that. But at our age, things were a bit different. But I have to say, when I look back on it, I want to pat both of us on the shoulder, on the back, because I think it took a lot of courage on both our parts to say, as the cliche goes, to grab for the brass ring of real love. This late in life. And the word that I want to offer into our conversation, you're referring to it, you're talking about energy investing. And the word I want to introduce is devotion.
I like that.
Okay, because devotion literally means of the vow, of the vow. So I have a poem called Devotion that's in my new book, The Magic Hour. And one of the things... Devotion means we are people of the vow. We are not, quote, working at our relationship. I really don't like that language because, we're all working at work, 30 to 60 to 80 hours a week. I think it's the wrong resonance. So as I looked at that and I wanted to express it in a way that had a resonance that felt right to me, it was the word devotion. So when you love somebody, there is an implicit vow immediately when you start to fall in love, right? And the question is, do you have the courage to make it explicit and say, yes, I'm gonna give myself to you. I'm going to explore with you this unknown land of us. We've never been an us before, okay? So we don't know what will happen. Whatever happened in the past, that was a different us. This is a new us. It takes courage. Let's hold hands. Let's be companions and take this one step at a time. And let's try to appreciate each moment, see the poetry in each moment. And if we do that, it enriches our lives so much. Frankly, I found work is easier when you love somebody. And I think you're better at it when you love somebody. And I've seen that in my clients. I have, you know, I've worked with Fortune 500 people. I've seen that the ones who really are in devoted relationships and who they show up as in the workplace is different than people who are just trying to scramble up the corporate ladder.
That's a really good point, too, because Viktor Frankl talked about man's search for meaning and that when we have a why, then anything is possible. And if you are devoted in your relationships, which was his why, when you are devoted to another, everything else makes sense and is easy because you're putting energy into everything to enhance your devotion to the other. And when did we get so lost from that? Because even saying it out loud to you, talking about devoting myself to another, in the back of my mind, I'm hearing that cultural message of that's so old fashioned. You should never, right? Like I can hear the myth in the back of my head saying, don't say you're devoted to another person. You're subjugating yourself if you're devoted to another person. Right. So even me who lives in a land of love can still be impacted by that cultural story. And if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Bob Kam, and we're talking about love, love in many fashions, love over 60, and the importance of love in healing what ails us as a society today. You can be part of the conversation by sending us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or if you'd like to call in, Carol can take your questions and we'll be happy to read them to us. Carol will also give you the phone number. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back after a moment to continue our conversation.
You're listening to a conversation with the reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett, and you can be a part of the show by calling in. Our phone number is 805-549-8855. Elizabeth?
Hello. Okay, so my guest today is Bob Kam, and we went into break, and I was talking about, even for me, who that is my life's message, is about love in all aspects. Even I have a hard time saying I'm completely devoted to my husband. I have a devotion to him and to our relationship. Even though I feel that, it's hard to say it because there is a cultural story in the back of my mind saying you shouldn't say you're devoted to your husband. That's so old school, traditional, like the subjugated wife who's sitting at home devoted to her husband. Even I still get caught in that.
Well, what I want to say about that, Elizabeth, is that I'm almost 74 years old, and I do enjoy reading about history. To my knowledge, there has never been a generation in the United States, no less anywhere else in the world, that was devoted culturally, where you could look at the culture and say that culture is devoted to love relationships, the way I mean the word devotion. So I get that there is that resonance for women in particular. Oh, you know, I don't want to be a Stepford wife. I don't want to be subjugated to my husband. This is not what I'm talking about at all. And I am talking about two people who are devoted to the relationship. Okay. And in every relationship, that means that there is on a fairly consistent basis, a challenge for both members of that relationship to decide at any given moment, where do I need to just be me, to be separate at this moment, to do my thing? And where do I need to perhaps let go of some of, you know, those impulses and actually give something to the relationship, to nourish the relationship? So I was not raised to do this, as I said earlier, and I don't think any generation has been, right? So I'm talking about something we have yet to achieve, right?
I agree.
So I do have a little poem, if we have time for it.
Absolutely.
That speaks to this, I think, in a metaphoric way.
Okay.
Can we do that?
I'm ready.
So this is from my book, Gazing, and it's called The Third Heart. Something has come between us, my darling, in the best possible way. Something sacred, holding us together, yet not a space or place. What could it be? If we close our eyes and listen, we can feel it, hear it. There it is, drumming. A third heart, not yours, not mine, but ours. A third heart. First cells divided as we shared first words. First beats struck as we touched. A third heart giving life to us, and us that had never been from a heart that had never been. We possess it together as it possesses us, growing stronger each day with whispers, caresses, stories, courage, truths told, gazes, longings finally met, as real as the heart beating in your chest and the one in mine, but stronger than both. Ancient and new, innocent and wise, compassionate, peaceful and clear. We may on occasion be blind to its beauty, numb to its force. We may sprain or bruise it, but we cannot break it. Its rhythm is self-healing, calling us home the way mothers and fathers have called their children home for millennia. Home, home, my darling. Home is where the third heart is.
That's perfect. And it draws to mind this image that I have of the love plants and love ferns, and you do imago therapy, so I'm sure you've heard this term, that couples are encouraged to have a plant that they nurture as representation of their relationship, and that if you're both putting time and love into that plant, then you are nurturing what you have. It's an entity that lives outside of you as an individual.
Right.
It requires time and attention.
Right. So what is that? One of the things that I think we have to mention about loving, one of the skills that is a prerequisite is listening, okay? And that takes devotion, because many of us have been, many of us have been raised to speak powerfully, to express our feelings, to dominate the situation, right? And I personally was raised in a family where it was more important to be a good debater than it was to be a good listener. The only reason to listen was to find the weakness in the other person's perspective. Mm-hmm. So when I say I was not raised to this, meaning the love relationship, I'm being dead honest about it. But I have been learning over the last many years to devote myself to becoming quiet, to becoming still, and to remembering that this woman in front of me, Andrea, is the woman that I absolutely love and adore her, and I know her really, really well. So if I listen from depth, then I not only hear what she's saying, but I know its origins, right? So we could say a lot more about listening, but I guess we have a question from a caller.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest is Bob Camm. And Carol, we do have a call. What's out there today.
Yeah, someone called KCBX on our phone line, 805-549-8855, with a two-part question. First, how can you stop grieving the past relationship? How do you stop that grieving? And then the second part of the question is, how can you meet people, especially during COVID-19?
Those are great two parts. I'll jump in the first one with the grieving, and Bobby, you can add on.
Oh, that's the easier part.
We never stop grieving. The most important lessons I learned as a clinician is that we never heal and then move away from what we were or who we were, that we learn to incorporate those experiences and then carry on and continue on. And so if we don't look at grief as a moment in time that we're trying to get over, that it's much easier to live with this idea that grief is part of being alive, and that in some ways grief is a gift of being able to have loved someone so deeply that you miss them on a deep level. And so to reframe how we see grief, not as much, it is painful and it is a letting go and it is a catharsis, but it's also a beautiful gift and reminder that I loved so deeply that I wrench this grief from me in honor of that relationship. So that's my answer to the first part.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. Mm-hmm. And I would just add a couple quick pieces. I love Martine Prechtel's statement. I think the most beautiful statement about grief. He says, grief is praise because it is the natural way love honors what it misses.
Yes.
So, and the other thing I would say is that as a culture, because we have denigrated sadness and grief, any kind of so-called negative feeling, which I don't think, I agree with you, they're not negative at all, they're nourishing. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency to think that we're grieving too long, or we should be done. It should be over. Okay, well, I would say there's a simple arithmetic formula here. The depth of your grief is equal to the depth of the love that you felt for that person or thing that you have now lost. And so don't let people tell you, you should be at closure, you should be done, what's the matter with you? You can live your life and keep grieving as it comes, and it will diminish over time. And you can, at some point, stand up and take actions, and they don't have to be seeking out another person. They can just be actions that are constructive for your life. It could be anything. You know, if you were a runner, you get back to running. If you like to write, you're back to journaling. If you make pottery, you're back to doing that. If you love playing basketball with your buddies, you get back to doing that. So it's not like, oh, I'm grieving and I can't have a life. Grieving is part of life. It's all woven in. As to the second question, how do you meet somebody at a time of COVID? I think I want to admit out loud, I'm not an expert in that field. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of social media, there are dating sites, and I'd say you could use your imagination and jump into that. But Elizabeth, you might be way more versed in that than I am.
Well, so I'm going to twofold back my response as well. One, if you live long enough, if you have the gift of living long enough, you will probably be grieving every day because you'll have lost so much. So that's another piece too, is just make space for the grief, like the way you make space for exercising.
Exactly.
And the way you make space for eating a nutritious meal, is it should become sort of part of your daily practice. Grief gets out of control when we don't make time for it and we try to push it down, and then grief takes over and then it's always there. And so grief needs a space. And so if you were to say to yourself every day from 4 to 5, I'm going to allow grief to emerge and I'll light a candle, and grief can be whatever grief needs to be. Some days it'll be tears. Some days it'll be quiet. Some days it'll be over in 5 minutes. Some days, but you have to give space to grief. Otherwise it doesn't go away. And so you're grieving that lost relationship because it's taken over. So give it space. And then, as Bob said, then take actions. And the time of COVID dating is interesting. I am becoming more and more a big proponent of some of the dating websites like eHarmony and Match. And I'm not a spokesperson for any of them, so you have to find your own where you're comfortable. But they have a very high success rate. People are really finding others that they can connect with. And this medium works well. I will say this, that Helen Fisher, who's an expert in this area, mm-hmm. has said that people spend too much time chatting before they meet in person. And Bob, you had this experience when you met Andrea, that she says people spend way too much time chatting. And then they meet each other in person and there's no chemistry. And so in some ways it was a waste. So Helen Fisher would say, the sooner you meet someone in person and see each other, whether it's on Zoom or 10 feet away for a cup of coffee, the better. But to put yourself out there, because it is a matter of odds, to do a little Vegas on you, that you have to put in, you have to put yourself out there enough time so the odds are in your favor. So that's my answer to the question. But the second piece I want to really reiterate is that we don't have to necessarily devote ourselves to new relationships to devote our loving self into the universe. Because for me, the premise of the show at the beginning was, how can we devote more energy to the actions of loving so that it takes up the space right now we're filling with hating people who don't think the way we do, or having, you know, disagreements. We're talking about, how do we heal the divide? And my argument is that if we nurture and devote our energies towards loving those partners we have, those children we have, those cousins and extended relatives that we, you know, are annoyed with on social media, but we actually send out love, send pictures of our childhood, send feelings of devotion to each other, that takes up the space that the negativity is filling now.
Right.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is Bob Kam. And Bob, I'm going to throw it then back at you and say, but when it comes to devotion in a new relationship that you and Andrea had to form very quickly, what's different now? Because it's 14 years later. Mm-hmm. Are you still who you were when you met? Or what's different?
Well, I would hope not, of course. Because that would mean that we hadn't grown at all. But here's something that, you know, young people, it's really important that they keep this in mind. We know from all kinds of study that the initial phase of falling in love is not the same as being in love, devoting yourself to a love relationship, being great companions emotionally, sexually, romantically, mundanely. So, you know, when I read about somebody in Hollywood that they were married for 2 years and they got divorced, and somebody in particular I'm thinking of, it's probably because they couldn't handle the reality of a relationship. Okay, they just wanted the inebriation part, and it's wonderful. Of course, it's wonderful, but it's only going to last generally 3 to 6 months. And then, you know, from the point you commit to each other, you start living together, whatever, you're going to have to deal with the fact that maybe there are household habits of the other person that don't thrill you, right? So what's different about Andrea and me? We know each other deeply, and we have a way of sort of flowing with each other. And it's not like we don't ever have a miss or a tiff, but we've learned to move through them very quickly. We've learned to give each other the benefit of the doubt, to not escalate and go into some big, you know, making a case against each other. You're very aware, I'm sure, of the work of the Gottmans, right? And John Gottman talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse that are, you know, destroyers of relationships. And one of them is contempt, right? So we have to discipline ourselves to not build cases, to realize that that's our crazy self. In one book called My Stroke of Insight, she calls it the itty bitty SHI committee. I don't know what we can say on radio, but so that crazy part of ourself that wants to build up a case against the other person and go negative, we have to learn to control that and to be suspicious of it, that it is really a manifestation of a bunch of childhood habits and voices that will not help us going forward. So I think I can say that, you know, Andrea and I, the overwhelming majority of the time, are quite capable of recognizing what is some kind of a childhood pattern that's trying to play itself out and accuse or blame the other person for something, and what's an actual legitimate issue, right? And so if we have a legitimate issue, we use the Imago dialogue, right, from Imago relationship therapy, because we're both trained in that. And that helps us to really listen to each other deeply, as I was mentioning before, and to speak from our personal experience without accusation or blame. So we have a way of flowing with each other. I mean, we've been indoors the better, you know, with each other. We've been the better part of 9 months now. We haven't actively engaged with a lot of other people. And, you know, we just enjoy being together. We enjoy each other's companionship. And we can be quiet together, you know, and we can be silly and raucous and play together. I think being able to play with each other is really important. Just playfulness, silliness, I think is important to share.
And I think that's a good point because, again, if we're talking about how do we help heal this divide that we see throughout this country, one of the things we have to go back and look at is, are we having any fun together?
Yeah,
are we allowing ourselves to have any fun together? Is everything serious? And you know, not to diminish, but this generation, I'm going to go back to my students a little bit because that's where I started off this thought, was my concern for them because they have been told, you know, don't devote yourself to another person because it will be dangerous. And so they don't. They don't get into intimate relationships. Yeah. They don't allow themselves to be vulnerable. And the other reason they don't allow themselves to be vulnerable is they've been told their entire life that the world is coming to an end, that climate change is real and they're going to die. And so why invest yourself in anything that's real because life is going to end. And I think that's been a huge disservice for these last two generations because they don't have a lot of opportunities just to have fun and be silly because in the back of their mind is, how can I be so jovial when the world is coming to an end? And how can I put in time to fall in love and make a family and devote myself if everything's going to come to an end? And so I think that, again, falls on us as wise elders, as elders in the community, to mentor and to mirror and to reflect out into the world that it's okay to have fun. It's okay to still laugh. It's okay to not 24/7 think about the seriousness of the world around us because that's where life happens. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Carol, we have time for one more quick question.
All righty. And it's maybe not so much a question, but kind of a suggestion. And I will remind everyone, we have a disclaimer that KCBX, that the views are that of the speaker and not necessarily KCBX. But the caller suggested that the first caller, you know, the one who was looking for a new relationship, to try meetup.com. And he says that you can find local groups that have similar interests. For example, he walks with a group of people at Pismo Beach once a week. So
that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, meetup.com is his suggestion.
One of the things I like to tell my male clients who feel that maybe they're ready to try a relationship again is do the things that you love to do in the world. Now, I know there's COVID, but there's still a lot of things you can do socially distancing. You know, if you like to kayak, you can still go kayak. You can still play golf. You can still go for hikes. I do it twice a week. You know, do the things you love to do and notice the people along the way. That's one thing. Elizabeth, I want to come back to what you said about your students because it really kind of pulls at my heart. I think my generation needs to be able to look at those young people and say, we are sorry. Mm-hmm. We are sorry for being derelict in the way we've handled this planet. And we are sorry that we have been derelict in the way we've structured society where we've talked about family, but we've made society about work. Mm-hmm. We've talked about, you know, spirituality and religion, but we've made society about materialism. And we need to, I personally don't think I've done a lot of that, but I would like to say for the generation, we're sorry. It doesn't mean, however, that all of us are idiots, right? And we have something to say that's worth their taking a moment to listen to. And the essence of it is what you were saying before, which is ultimately, if the world is going to end, the best place for you to be in that moment is in the arms of someone you love who loves you back. It's better to take the risk. The rewards are so much greater than if you become the CEO of some company and a multimillionaire and drive, you know, have five Teslas in your garage. In the end, you're going to be walking around with this giant hole in your heart, wondering what you missed.
And I'd like to kind of finish up the show just in that spot, because if people are thinking about their virtual Thanksgivings, or maybe they won't be virtual, or how you're going to spend the time over the holidays, you know, this is a great time for parents to work on their devoted love for their partner and mirror that for your children. Reflect that to your children. Show them what devoted love looks like, because our kids are watching us every single day to see how adults behave. And so if you want to heal the world, heal your relationships so that you can pass those healed relationships down to your children. And so over this time of COVID or in Thanksgiving, when you're around each other, double down on love, double down on love conversations, double down on talking about what it's like to be vulnerable with someone and to allow your heart to be broken and then to open up and to love again. Because if we don't model that behavior, we're never going to heal the rifts and divides we have in our culture, in our community, in our relationships. So Bob Kamm, thank you so much for being my guest today and for inspiring this conversation. The book I'm looking at is Love Over 60. And if people want to read more of your work and find out about you, how can they connect?
Well, if they just go to Amazon and type in Bob Kamm, K-A-M-M, like Michael twice, they'll find Love Over 60 and Gazing and Lyric Heart and The Magic Hour and Real Fatherhood and The Superman Syndrome. All six books are out there.
And hopefully this will just be the beginning of our opportunities to have conversations together.
I'd love to come back. Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in today and for being a part of the conversation. You can find me at Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com, or find me on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, or follow me on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or podcast our show and share it with your friends. And I'd like to leave you with two quick quotes from Rumi. Your task is not to seek love, but merely to seek and find barriers within yourself that you have built against it. Love is the cure, for your pain will keep giving birth to more pain until your eyes constantly exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. Mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but